Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Morgen, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde aus nah und fern, von wo aus auch immer Sie uns zuschauen mögen. Ich begrüße Sie zu dieser Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt aus Belgrad, aufgezeichnet am 8. Juni 2024. Was Sie im Hintergrund da in Umrissen in Facetten erkennen können, das ist die Belgrader Burg, eine ganz wichtige Befestigung, die viele Jahrhunderte Geschichte erlebt hat, hier gleichsam an der Grenze von Mitteleuropa und des Balkans gelegen. Ein Zeugnis für die enorme strategische Wichtigkeit Serbiens im Verlauf der europäischen Geschichte. Und auch heute ist Serbien ein Schlüsselort, nicht nur zum Verständnis Europas, sondern auch zum Verständnis der Konflikte, die Europa seit vielen, vielen Jahrhunderten immer wieder heimsuchen. Und momentan stehen wir da an einer ganz gefährlichen Abbruchkante, meines Erachtens. Ich hoffe, dass das natürlich nicht die schlimmstmögliche Wendung nimmt, was man sich ausdenken kann in der Konfrontation zwischen Russland und den Westmächten. Beide Seiten scheinen da gefangen in der Unmöglichkeit, diese Konfrontation zu verlieren. Für Präsident Putin steht alles auf dem Spiel. Sollte er sich da verkalkuliert haben in der Ukraine, würde das enorme Bedeutung haben für sein Land, für ihn auch persönlich natürlich, für all die Leidtragenden dieses Krieges. Würde nämlich heißen, dass sein ganzes Erbe, alles, wofür er gearbeitet hat, im Grunde verschleudert wäre. Und auf der anderen Seite haben wir den Westen, haben wir die westlichen Mächte, und dort beobachten wir, dass natürlich auch mit größtem Kapitaleinsatz gekämpft wird. Es scheint so zu sein, dass auch der Westen sich da glaubt, keinerlei Niederlage erlauben zu können. Also nicht wie in Afghanistan die Amerikaner oder in Vietnam, wo sie einfach schlussendlich die Segel streichen mussten. Ganz im Gegenteil, die Zeichen stehen auf Konfrontation. Und darüber habe ich nun mit einer Persönlichkeit gesprochen, die vielleicht wie keine andere beide Seiten zu verstehen versucht und irgendwo auch zu versöhnen versucht. Das ist der serbische Präsident Aleksandar Vučić. Ich habe ihn getroffen hier in Serbien, in Belgrad, in einem Teil der präsidialen Anlagen, in einem alten Königsschloss, in einem Residenz- und Repräsentationsgebäude. Wir hatten die Möglichkeit, fast eine Stunde lang zu sprechen. Und Präsident Vučić, Sie werden es sehen, ein sehr nachdenklicher, ein ruhig und fast stillsprechender Mensch, ein untypischer Politiker, möchte man sagen. Er wirkt eher wie ein Intellektueller, wie ein Hochschulprofessor vielleicht, wie ein Denker, aber sehr erfolgreich hier politisch seit vielen, vielen Jahren in den Geschicken des Staates dabei. Und Präsident Vučić zieht da eine sehr, sehr düstere, eine fast finstere Schlussfolgerung. Er bereitet sein Land auf einen Krieg vor, hat er mir gesagt. Die strategischen Reserven würden da jetzt überprüft. Und er rechne damit, dass es also innerhalb der nächsten 4 Monate da zu einer ganz großen Konfrontation, zu einem großen Krieg kommen könnte. Das ist eine nicht eben erbauliche Aussicht auf die unmittelbare Zukunft. Ich persönlich, aber meine Meinung steht hier nicht im Vordergrund, sehe es nicht ganz so düster. Ich glaube nicht, dass für die westliche Seite so viel auf dem Spiel steht wie auch wie für die russische Seite. Deshalb glaube ich, dass früher oder später sich da doch auch auf westlicher Seite die Einsicht in eine Art Verhandlung, in eine diplomatische Lösung breitmachen wird. Präsident Putin hat das ja bereits signalisiert, aber vielleicht wird das eben im Westen auch wieder als Schwäche empfunden, sodass man glaubt, man müsse jetzt erst recht hier nachlegen. Darüber reden wir, aber nicht nur über das. Wir reden natürlich auch über Serbien, wir reden über Mitteleuropa. Wir reden über die Birkenstock-Konferenz, wo noch nicht klar ist, ob eine serbische Delegation daran teilnehmen wird. Und wir reden auch über den Frieden und weitere Fragen, die uns gegenwärtig gesellschaftlicher Art beschäftigen. Das ist das große Interview von Weltwoche Daily mit Präsident Aleksandar Vučić. Und schauen Sie sich das an. Sicher sehr interessant, was dieser Staatsmann hier zu berichten hat. Vielleicht noch ganz kurz zu seiner Person. Er ist 54 Jahre alt, er ist Jurist, er hat als einer der Besten seines Jahrgangs sein Studium abgeschlossen, ist schon lange in der Politik dabei, war zuerst mehrere Jahre von 2014 bis 2017, wenn ich das jetzt richtig erinnere, war er Ministerpräsident. Seit 2017 ist er Präsident Serbiens, hat soeben die Kommunalwahlen hinter sich gebracht, sehr erfolgreich, noch stärker. Er hat dieser Tage einen Hochgeschwindigkeitszug eingeweiht in Serbien in Zusammenarbeit mit China. Das ist eben auch interessant, darüber haben wir gesprochen. Stadler Rail, Peter Spuhler mit seinen Zügen, auch ein großer Lieferant hier in Serbien, und Serbien ein sehr guter Kunde dieser Schweizer Firma. Das heißt, wir haben auch da Bezüge aus der Eidgenossenschaft nach Serbien. Alexander Vučić wird in unseren Medien hauptsächlich kritisiert. Man wirft ihm vor, zu verweigern, die Anerkennung des Kosovo. Wir haben über diese komplexe Kosovo-Frage auch gesprochen. In einer gewissen Kürze muss ich Ihnen sagen, wir konnten da einfach nicht einsteigen. Das ist ein ganz großes Thema. Er schneidet das an. Er gibt da bestimmte Einblicke, aber wir haben das jetzt nicht in der Art vertieft, wie man das, wenn man auf diesem Thema Thematik sich konzentrieren würde, wie man das vielleicht tun sollte. Aber trotzdem für jetzt uns Schweizer, die da etwas distanzierter stehen, doch interessant, was er zu sagen hat. Das wird ihm vorgeworfen, dass er da also eine zu harte Linie verfolge. Und auf der anderen Seite auch bezüglich der Medienfreiheit sind ihm da schon Vorwürfe gemacht worden. Ich habe diese Themen natürlich auch angesprochen und dem Angeschuldigten die Möglichkeit zu geben, seine Sichtweise darzulegen. Das Interview mit Präsident Vučić hier auf diesem Kanal. Düsteres, lehrreiches Vergnügen hätte ich jetzt fast gesagt, aber das ist das falsche Wort. Nein, schauen Sie sich's an. Vielen herzlichen Dank für die Aufmerksamkeit.
Mr. President, welcome to our program. Let's start with a very dark topic, the war in Ukraine. You had a TV interview recently where you said we're probably entering a situation which could be worse than World War II. How concerned are you at the moment about the escalation in Ukraine?
It's a different approach from my side than the approach of many other bigger and more important leaders, because I would like to see the peace, and most of the others would like to see the victory for one or another side. And when you have that kind of a different approach, then everything else is different. And but when you wish a peace, then you can easily puzzle all the problems we are facing with. And when you have this type of narrative and rhetoric, which is getting worse and worse day by day, and then you just have to understand that phrase made by famous historian Taylor, the train has left the station and no one can stop it. And it looks like that, and I believe that we are getting close to the last days of possible rethinking and reconsidering of everything that is happening in Ukraine. If those big powers don't do anything in a short period of time, yes, I'm pretty much certain that we'll face a real disaster.
We see that the United States, Germany have said that the Ukrainians can attack targets on Russian territory. The Western media are not so concerned. They say, well, President Putin is bluffing when he says there will be consequences. What do you think? Where are the red lines of President Putin? When is the West overstepping the red line?
If you bet on a fact that someone is bluffing, it means that you have no better cards. But you just believe that the other side has weaker cards, and you're not sure about it, because you don't know and you didn't see his or their cards. And to me, would have always been very cautious and prudent when assessing Putin's will or Putin's possible future moves, and wouldn't be that sure. Of course, I cannot be in his shoes. I don't see things through his eyes, but I believe that this will just contribute to the further deterioration of the situation. This won't help anyone. This will just deteriorate the situation.
Leaders in Germany, even politicians in Switzerland, leaders in the United States, they say, well, Putin, he's an imperial dictator. He starts with Ukraine and then he attacks other countries. The German military minister has just expressed that Putin had explicitly said he will attack other countries. And you're Russian president, is that his agenda? Is he an imperial conqueror? Is that the reason for this war?
I see things slightly differently. What I believe is that, first of all, we condemn that incursion and intrusion into Ukrainian territory, as you know, as a country, as a state. But it's more complex than it's much more complicated. And if you want to make this kind of equations, and then my question would be, what did you do with Serbia in 1999 and 2008? And then there were no responses. And you saw that Putin was using that Kosovo precedent in his recent statement as well. And there are no responses to that. The only response he got from Angela Merkel, okay, it was a bloodshed that lasted for almost 8 years in Kosovo, which is not totally right and not totally true. But at the end, Putin was adding, but yeah, it was not happening. It was not like happening in Donbass as well. And now it's a big political fight because Putin will always use this Kosovo precedent, which is not good for us Serbs. But if I were him, would have done most probably the same. Why would I care too much about Serbs and Serbia? I would do it because it's in the interest of Russia. And there is no proper response from the other side, speaking about international public law and things that some countries did or did not do in accordance, in adherence with UN Charter and UN resolutions and international public law in general. What is complicating the situation even more is that everybody is speaking only about war. Nobody wants to reach the peace. Nobody speaks about peace. Peace is almost a forbidden word. And please notice this. Because they say we need to win in order to secure future peace, but nobody's speaking about a peace, and then okay, you negotiate it. But you have the other side, you have to have the other side on the table as well. It's very strange to me that no one is actually attempting to stop the war. There is another theory which I can understand, which I don't say that I do approve, but I understand that West thinks that they can win easily against Putin. They want to exhaust him in Ukraine, and then they will enter the space, and then Russia in today's territory and shaped like it is today won't exist anymore, and Putin will be overthrown and everything else. Yeah, maybe that's possible, but
do you think that is possible? Is it possible to use Ukraine to weaken Russia?
Well, it weakened Russia anyway. Mm-hmm. But is it enough to destroy Russia and to overthrow Putin? I don't believe so. I don't believe so. And I believe that I cannot say they overestimate themselves. I believe they underestimate Russia and Putin.
How do you explain the mood in countries like France, Germany, United States, most part of the media? There, the mood is confrontation. We have to do more. We have to bring in more weapons. Everybody is saying that in the media and political mainstream. How do you explain that, this kind of war enthusiasm, to call it, to use this word?
Whenever I was asked by many people here to launch a war against Albanians and NATO in Kosovo because they were expelling our people, killing our people and everything else, I was just saying, okay, I do understand your emotions, I do understand your position, but would you really like if the fact that your mother will get a coffin with her son, husband, father, whomever? And then it's a slightly different approach. In today's Europe, they all act like big heroes, but they did not say to their people that they will pay a very big price. And speaking about it, you and all these leaders should do absolutely everything in order to stop any kind of warmongering behavior and everything. I mean even more from about Russia, but I'm speaking about this type of behavior. But at the end, people are thinking of their own interests. I do understand why Macron is insisting on this, because his stance is most probably, well, if I have to, and if we'll have to face Russia, it's better to facing them on Ukrainian soil than on European soil or Central European soil. And it's pretty much the same attitude of Germans with some differences. But on the other hand, before saying that, before doing that, that's what I think. They should all try to reach any kind of truce, any kind of ceasefire, and then to negotiate for 10, 20, 30, 50 years. Doesn't matter. It's better than a day of bitter fight, which we face today.
Do you think that the NATO countries and the United States will accept a military defeat of Ukraine? President Macron has said we have to send in NATO troops. This would probably mean
thank
world
you for
war.
This. Thank you for this question. Why I'm speaking that we are getting close to the precipice, to the abyss. Analyze the situation of NATO and the United States. They cannot afford themselves losing war in Ukraine, which means Russia cannot win. Because, first of all, their political legacy will not exist, or it will be so poor that they cannot allow themselves. Number two, position of Europe and the West, collective West, in geopolitical terms, will deteriorate so much that no one would be able to revive it and to renew it. And number three, it will open Pandora's box for more movements, at least, and hostilities against collective West in the future. But take the other side. That's a nice story for one side. Take the other side. If Putin loses the war, he's going to lose personally everything. If he loses the war, he won't have a legacy of someone that created a sort of common denominator for Ivan, Peter the Great, and Catherine the Great. And number three, Russia will not exist and won't be shaped like it is today. And then when you have these two sides so much far from each other, with their wishes, with their expectations, then you see that Everything is at stake. Everything. No one can afford to himself or to itself, to themselves, to lose. When you have this situation, that's why I was saying to you, that's why I was saying publicly and not hiding it, that we are getting closer to a real disaster.
That means you.
And then we come to another question. Yes. Sorry. Who is ready to lose 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 and 15 million people? Ask yourself. I'm not ready to lose a single man, and we won't participate in that. But it's a question for some other people.
They say in the West, the blame is totally on Putin. It was an unprovoked war. Was it an unprovoked war?
I'm not here to define it, and no doubt that it was a sort of violation of international public law. The problem is that there had been Minsk договоренности, соглашенности, Minsk arrangement, which Putin was insisting on that it was breached and violated all the times. But anyway, my question is, why were you not so strict when we had a similar situation in Serbia?
Double standards.
Yeah, no doubt. Duplicity, double standards, red herrings, whatever you want.
I thought.
No doubt about it.
Do you see a streak of, I don't use this term often, a streak of racism? I was always thinking that there is some kind of anti-Slavic impetus in this confrontational mood on the side of the West against Russia. That there is this old, you know, ingrained instinct that the West looks down on the East. Is this a factor in this whole absurdity?
I'm the president of the country, and I cannot make this kind of excuses, justifications, platitudes, whatever you take it. We can say there are some old alliances that are renewed, and something that was broken as well. But Ukrainians are Slavic people. Serbian language is very similar morphologically and phonetically speaking with Ukrainian language. More people here speak Russian than Ukrainian, but Ukrainian language is more similar to Serbian language than Russian language. And I think it's a disastrous situation for the Slav people altogether.
We were very close at the peace agreement in spring 2022. There is a book now coming out in our company by a Swiss diplomat who was involved in Ankara in these negotiations on the side. And he writes in his book that Ukraine and Russia were so close at an agreement, and it was positively the intervention of the United States and by Boris Johnson, who said, no, we don't want this peace. Do you think that is true? And second, what is the agenda of the United States? Do you really think that they want to go to the end to weaken Russia strategically?
Well, big powers, they have their interests. Of course, there is no love. And if they see someone as a security threat, if possible, they would go by the end. But I believe that was a wrong assessment. Although they might believe differently, because they can say, okay, we weakened them very much, and they lost people's power, they lost many things. But at the end, I'm not sure that they're very satisfied with the outcome so far. I believe that there were two big opportunities for the peace. That number one, which you have already mentioned, and number two, after a big Ukrainian offensive, after they retook Izium, Balaklea, Kupiansk, Krasny Liman, and many other places, and it's that was the very best moment for when they had an initiative to making a peace, but nobody wanted to do it because everybody thought momentum was on our side and now we can push them further more and we can do something more. But
you have just had a visit by the foreign minister of Ukraine, by Mr. Kuleba.
Yes, Mr. Kuleba and Olena Zelenska.
What is your impression? Would the Ukrainian government be willing to negotiate with Russia, or is there also the total confrontational mood?
I cannot say that it's a confrontational mood and mode. They are not in an easy situation, and I do understand their position. Doesn't mean that I 100% agree with them, but I do understand their position. Like I do my best to understand Russian position as well. I'm afraid that we are very, very far from reaching any kind of arrangement. I spoke to President Xi as well, Chinese president, and he has the same view on this issue as I do. We are very far away from reaching the agreement.
And how close?
Not before the end of the year.
How close are we now to a third world war, a confrontation?
I cannot say a third world war, but a big confrontation, how far we are. I believe that we are not far away from it. Not more than 3-4 months. And there is a danger to happen even before that.
Where do you stand in this whole insanity? Where does Serbia stand in this conflict?
We'll keep peace, stability and tranquility within the region and in our country. We'll do our best at least. We were the champions of the world in number of wars that we had in 20th century. First Balkan War, Second Balkan War, First World War. In First World War, I don't know whether you knew the fact that we lost 28.9% of our overall population, and Serbia became the biggest victim of the First World War. And no one has ever acknowledged that. These data are data that were shown at the Paris Peace Conference. And France lost 10.5%, but we lost 28.9%. And then we had a Second World War with that terrible concentration camp in Croatia, Jasenovac, and many other things. 1 million Serbs were killed during the Second World War, and we were the only who were opposing the Nazi movement in an entire region from the very beginning. At the end of the war, everybody joined us, as it goes, always. But then we had all these wars during the 1990s, then NATO aggression in 1999. And after all these wars, my big dream is to preserve the peace here and stability, and will do my best to keep the country safe and stable. That's why I'm very cautious, very prudent on every single statement against anyone. You know, I don't fight with anyone, just keeping tranquility, and that's it.
And the vocabulary is very crass. The vocabulary is very tough on all sides, especially also on the European side. Will you participate in this conference in Switzerland? Do you think this is a good conference without
I have discussed that with Volodymyr. I was discussing it with Chinese. We still haven't made our decision, but we'll see. We'll see what level, who might come, who might not come. We'll have the decision in a few days. But I would like to see both sides around the table, to be very honest.
Do you have an explanation why we are living in such crazy times right now? I think this is the craziest period.
It's easy, dear friend, to see it. You have totally different interests. You have conflicting interests of big powers. There is a big power on the rise, which is China, which has a lot of conflicting interests with the United States of America. US and Europe, let me call it collective West, would like to preserve everything they worked for, everything they had in the last 300 years. And the other people are seeking for, from their point of view, more justice, more equal world. And well, with the wish of preservation and desire of change, have to conflict. Mm-hmm. And totally different economic and political interests. And the world is changing, although we don't want to accept it and we don't want to admit that. But it is changing on a daily basis and much faster than ever before. And when you have this kind of conflicting interests, then contradicting interests, then you get close to big clashes and to big wars. And I don't see the way how someone can stop it. And would like to see that more than anything else, to tell you the truth. Today I was checking all the data about our reserves on oil, I don't know, even from flour to sugar to salt to everything else, because I don't know what tomorrow will bring to all of us.
You have just had the opening of a fast track train today in Belgrade, and it was interesting. It's a cooperation between Serbia and China, and Serbia, if I'm correct, is trying to have a balanced foreign policy. You work together with everybody who is willing to work with you, and now they are saying, I've just talked to a friend of mine who is the head of the Springer company in Berlin, and he told me China is a strategic threat to the West. It's a threat to our democracy. We have to contain China because their political system is totally different from ours. This is a mindset, of course. He's not alone. You have good experience. What do you say about this China?
If I may add, dear friend, there are many people in the West that are doing their best to produce as many adversaries and as many enemies as no one could have imagined so far. And it's, yes, we have had so far a very good relationship with Chinese. And I'm proud of that, not hiding it, as you can see. But we bought, firstly, and the biggest number of trains we bought from Switzerland. And we are still buying from Stadler. But we need more trains. And we bought also Chinese trains. And we are good friends with them, and we don't see any kind of danger, and they're not going to put us in any kind of jeopardy. We're going to use, before we enter the EU, and nobody knows when this will happen or will it happen, we're going to use free trade agreement with China, with Egypt, with United Arab Emirates as well. My job is to take care of this country, to take care of our people. You could have seen a lot of developments, that Belgrade became a city of cranes here in the region, maybe the only one, where the biggest progress and the best development. Let me tell you just one example. Make a comparison between Serbia and Bosnia. When I became the prime minister 10 years ago, an average salary in Serbia was 329 euros. In Bosnia, 378. Which means 50 euros bigger, which is 16-17% more. Now, an average salary in Bosnia is 650 something, and in Serbia is 830, just in 10 years. And the level of public debt to GDP ratio in this country is less than 50%, and we are part of Eurostat, just for you to know. The others are not. And I'm saying this because you can see that we successfully did our job, but we did it because we attracted a lot of EU investments, but a lot of American, Swiss, Japanese, but Chinese also, but Arab investments, and we were working with everybody, and we'll carry on with this type of politics. This is what secures our people's jobs and the record level of low level of unemployment rate and the record level of employment level, positive employment rate. And this is what we did. And now we are very much focused on 2027, on that expo, because for us that's a cover for all works we have to do, including better educational system, including a lot of infrastructural works, also AI sector development, and we became the presiding country of this partnership for artificial intelligence of 29 countries, and supported also by France and Switzerland, and these are good things. That's what we need to do. I cannot think about wars.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I mean, there are two philosophies now colliding. There are those who say we have to defend democracy against autocracy, and then there are the others who say we're living in a multipolar world with different countries. They are all our potential partners, and you would be a defender of this multipolar plurality.
I have one question for you. Can you watch in Switzerland, let's say, Chinese or Russian TV?
We can not in Germany. In Switzerland we can have Russia Today, but in Germany everything is forbidden.
Okay. If it's forbidden, is it democracy? And in Serbia, you can watch Ukrainian TV, Russian TV, Chinese TV, but also American TVs, Brits, Swiss, French, German, whichever you want. That's your choice. Who is defining what democracy is? Or when I was very young, almost a kid, and I was very bad in drawing, painting, whatever. I was like totally untalented. And then I drew a horse. The horse didn't look like a horse. I had to make an inscription down there saying, "This is a horse." And that's what they do today, you know, when nobody sees that there are democratic forces, they say we are democracy, you know, and you are not, you know, and that's it, you know. It's like, just let me remind you on stupid stories about election frauds in December in Serbia. And I said to you and I said to them, there was no election fraud, we're going to win with bigger margin, with bigger difference. And now we had elections, repeated elections, and we won with much bigger margin. And what about election fraud? Everybody forgot about these stupid stories. And nobody's commenting it even furthermore. But I'm telling you, it's here in this country you can say whatever you want. I'm the most attacked person. If that's not democratic enough, I would like to see these kind of channels in their own country, but I don't see them. But it's, you know, like, it reminds me, it recalls my memory from my childhood and that horse that I wanted to draw.
In newspapers, articles on Serbia and on you, for example, in Germany, I'm quite often in Germany, there is, I would say, 90% is negative. They say, well, President 99. Vucic, he's also like a semi-autocrat, and Serbia is cooperating with these terrible countries like Russia and China. What would you say to these critics if they were standing in this room here and talking down on your country?
I would say, yes, I do understand their interests, but I know that we keep our word. When we discuss lithium issue, we promised to Germans that we'll work with them, and we'll work with them, doesn't matter what they do with us. But my question to you is, what they would say to someone who would have taken 13.5% of their territory? And they did it with our territory. And this is true. And in a totally illegal way. They would say it's not illegal, but I say it's illegal, and it's obvious for everybody that it was illegal. And I believe that we are very tolerant, very patient, and well-mannered when we discuss and when we speak about our attitude and our stances towards them. Speaking about democracy and autocracy, yeah. We'll have some other questions, but I'll skip it now because I don't want to put in danger an interest of Serbian people. Don't care about myself, but need to care about my country.
What would you say, I mean, according to you, what does Serbia stand for in the world? I mean, if you would say Serbia has a message to the world, what would you say is Serbia?
We are an independent country, sovereign country that stands for peace, that stands for real values, which includes the respect for differences and different approaches of different countries. And we are a country that would like to cooperate with everybody in the world. And we are on our EU path. But yes, we have our own brain and we decide by ourselves not to disconnect all our ties with our traditional friends, and we won't do it. And we are obstinate, we are stubborn from time to time in order to keep our freedom on making decision, and we'll keep on working that way. And at the end, we are very much committed, dare to say devoted, in economic progress of our country, and we do it successfully. In this region, we became an engine of an entire region. Just for you to know, Serbia in the last 4 years attracted more than 62% of overall Western Balkans FDIs. We are 50% of overall Western Balkans GDP, 55% of overall Western Balkans export. Well, it was not the case 10 years ago. Now it is. And this kind of gap between us and the others will grow.
What are the, in your eyes, the foremost qualities of Serbia and the Serbian people? What is there something that makes you particularly proud about your own country? Would you say this is an achievement the world doesn't see, which is really great, what we have done?
It's, first of all, it's the speaking about Serbs. Serbs are proud and dignified people, but everybody thinks of themselves the same. There is one good thing and one bad thing about us. We have great individuals in all different kinds of social spheres, from scientists, from sciences and scientists as individuals, to cultural life, sports, everything else. But when we come to collective approach and collective successes, we are much worse than many others. That's why you have Serbs like Nikola Jokic, 3 times MVP of in NBA. That's why we had Nikola Tesla. He was 100% Serbian, of course, then American citizen. From Mikhailo Pupin to Novak Djokovic to many other people. And it's because we are persistent, consistent, but we always lack a system. And we always thought that the talent was enough, which is not. Now I believe that we started changing our own mindsets, and I really believe in a very hard work, dedicated, systemic and systematic approach. That's what I believe in. But what we'll never give in, it's our freedom, it's our independence, and we are not puppets of anyone. No one can dictate us what we're going to decide on each issue. Today you can just get an email or fax from someone, either in Brussels, either in Washington, either in Moscow, either somewhere else. We get those emails, but we read those emails, but we decide by ourselves. That's the difference between us and many others. And I'm smiling from time to time when they say, hey, you know, everybody is 100% aligned with our politics, only Serbia is not 100% aligned. And I say to them very often, but if all these guys are 100% aligned, why they need their governments? You just send a text, you know, and email, and they will say it's done, tick in the box, and that's it. why they need their government. We believe that we should make decisions, you know, even in Switzerland from Landsgemeinde Institute. You were taking care of your rights, of everything, and making decisions by yourselves. We are at least on that point relatively similar.
How do you see the future of Europe and the future of the European Union? I mean, there are so many problems we have now. Migration, we have the problem of Islamism,
I won't put in jeopardy position of Serbia, and will be very we're going to get a very short answer. I'm very hopeful, but at the same time very much afraid of European future.
There is a huge thing now in Germany with attacks by Islamist terrorists. Serbia has been for centuries, you can say, on the front line of the defense as a Christian country against the Muslim aggressors. You know, you have fought here since many centuries. What's your suggestion to leaders in Germany, in other countries, in France, how to deal with this phenomenon of radical Islam?
It is not going to be much better, it's going to be worse. We should all cooperate on all these issues, from migration issue to all security issues. And I was always advocating European security to be defined in a different way, not only through NATO, but nobody wanted to listen to small guys from the small countries. Now I don't know, because those video snippets were so terrible, so frightening. I hope that this will never happen in my country, and I wish Germans not to see it again.
And how do you cope with this problem in Serbia? What do you do with your migration laws?
We use all our agencies in order to secure peace, which is not always easy.
Another very hot topic and complicated for people who are not so familiar with the Serbian history, the history of the Yugoslavian war, is the Kosovo question. What's the importance of the Kosovo question for you and for your country?
There are thousands of important issues. And if I start speaking about the past and about the Serbian people's soul, everybody in the West would say, okay, this guy's past-oriented, backwards-oriented, and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to skip it. The real issue is today that people hated the most this kind of double-standard approach made by West regarding Kosovo and Ukraine. And this is something that you're going to hear at every single step you make here in Belgrade, from everybody, from absolutely everybody. And we needed a compromising solution. We were close to that compromising solution. Then they didn't want to reach it. Now we are far away from any kind of compromising solutions. We don't even speak to each other, although we were always ready to discuss every single issue with them. But they don't want to found, which is their obligation from the first agreement 11 years ago, Association of Serb Municipalities. It's a difficult situation, but we'll do our utmost to keep the peace and calm. That's it.
And for you personally, what's the most important issue about Kosovo? I mean, you are a young Serbian. I mean, you have witnessed the war, of course. You have seen it. But just for a foreigner to understand, what is, in your eyes, the most crucial issue in this whole question, which we probably don't understand?
We need to get respect from the others, which means it cannot be a one-sided solution that Albanians get everything, Serbs lose everything. No one is stupid in Serbia. We know how difficult the situation is. But that's why we are insisting on a compromising solution. And to me, I believe in Serbian hardworking people. I believe in the region, to tell you the truth. We need open borders or no borders. between Bosnia and Serbia, Albania and Montenegro, and Montenegro and Serbia, North Macedonia and Serbia. But we are not close to that, unfortunately. We need to put economy as the most important issue for all of us. But on the other hand, when you have the war in Ukraine, when everybody is raising and rising emotions, you face the same here in the region. And when you speak to Serbs about Kosovo, every single song that we chant, everything, it comes from Kosovo. It's not against anyone, but we are very much, in a very deep way, tied with Kosovo, and you cannot untie that in a way that people from the West wanted.
Before we try to find some optimistic beams of light at the horizon, we have to talk about one issue which is also extremely complicated, the war in Gaza. This is something which is like, I don't know, it's a biblical conflict. It's very tough. What's your take on that? What's your perspective on the war in Gaza? How dangerous is it? Is it also part of this very explosive environment
that
we have now?
It is. Now you see that it's a bigger problem with Hezbollah than with Hamas in Gaza, with Hezbollah in Lebanon. And I hope that all sides will try to find a proper and peaceful solution. And we have always been very close to both, to Jewish people and to Arab people since we founded a non-aligned movement, if you remember. Now we can just advocate a peace, but it's a... You know, when they launched that draft proposal resolution on Srebrenica, they got thousands of questions from at least 100 countries all over the world. Okay, why don't you do it with Gaza? And their response was, of course, unofficially, well, that's why we are doing it with Bosnia and Serbia. It's easier than doing it with Gaza, because Americans and the others will never allow it. And then, in order to show that we don't hate Muslims, we'll go against Serbs, because we cannot go against Israel. And then we paid once again the price instead of someone else. Yeah.
I wrote in my newspaper against this decision with the massacre of Srebrenica. I said this is not a genocide. I mean, it was a massacre. It's clear it was like, it's a terrible incident. But what kind of answers did you get when you
I didn't even go to that, to the issue of legal liabilities, individual, collective, or whatever. My question was very simple. Whether it was genocide or a terrible crime or everything else, Dodik was insisting on that. I was not. I was asking three other questions. Number one, why are you doing this after having that resolution on all genocides in general from 2015? Why are you doing this in a very particular moment? And number three, are you sure that you are going to reconcile anyone, or it's going to be more tensions and more political turmoils in the region? And number four, you didn't get even a consent within Bosnia. Is it going to get people closer to each other or much away from each other? And I didn't get any response on all these questions. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Why did you need this?
So why did they do it?
I believe that Gaza is a part of an answer. And the other answer is, yeah, we should do something against those Serbs, because Dodik is creating problems to us from their point of view, and that's it. They don't analyze the fact that they, as a matter of fact, violate Dayton Peace Accord, not Dodik, but anyway.
So they use the UN structures to punish countries who don't go along with certain geopolitical interests.
Of course, it doesn't happen for the first time. It doesn't happen for the first time. But they found they were almost repulsed, and they found a country that resisted in a very, very strong way. As a matter of fact, we won the majority of the countries. Not because people were not aware of what happened in Srebrenica, but people did not like the momentum, people did not like the lack of inclusiveness, people did not see what was that all about and what this will bring to the region and to the country as well.
Where is the center of hope today in the world? I mean, which politicians create to you personally some hope? Let's talk about people like President Erdogan, probably in the United States. Is it Donald Trump? Is it going to be better with Donald Trump?
I cannot speak about it publicly from very obvious reasons. But yes, we need a lot of changes in the world in order to calm down the situation between the nations and between different countries, and it's of an utmost importance, and it's high time.
What is the importance of religion in these days? In Europe, religion is dying, in Western Europe, and you have all these new religions, you know, climate religion, woke religion, all this stuff. What is the importance of religion, and how dangerous are these new religions that are popping up?
People were modern, urban, fashionable if they were becoming agnostics and atheists. But now I can say that I'm becoming at least a bit more religious, although I'm not an example of a very religious man, but I'm totally anti-woke oriented, and I cannot believe that these values are going to be the values of contemporary world. And I believe in tradition, I believe in rational conservatism and economic liberalism and modernism.
And where does Switzerland stand in your view of the world? Serbia and Switzerland have long-standing relationships. What's your take on Switzerland?
It's an important country, and we would like to see bigger role of Switzerland, but also more objective approach to the situation, at least here in the Balkans. Not going to teach anyone anything about anything else because they are much smarter than I am. But on the Balkans, we saw a bit one-sided approach. Anyway, we have developed a very good relationship and we'll do our best to make it even better.
And my final question is a personal question to you, Mr. President. Thanks for your time again. What's the most important thing in the life of a man?
His legacy, what will happen after his life.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.